Don't move, just leave your dial out. Good ears monitor. Lean back and stay a while now. Good ears monitor.
Well, I'm not going to move at all. I mean, I'm Stan. I'm Bill Mazur. One of the reasons I'm immovable is I like Myron Cohen's jokes. So do you? Well, Myron's going to join us here in a few minutes, and for you, no cover, no minimum. First, though, we have the group known as Chicago with something apropos, Saturday in the Park. Chicago, good group. Now, who, I ask you, would ever describe Myron Cohen as a gentleman farmer? Myron, yet, who hangs out in all those lavish clubs from Miami Beach to Vegas. Well, Myron once said he was a gentleman farmer because he likes to walk through the garden and tip his hat to all the tomatoes. I wonder if he also tips his hat in a grain elevator. Anyway, reporter Jay Miller caught up with Myron in Las Vegas, and here they are.
One question I'd like to know, do you think that there is a particular danger for non-Jewish comedians trying to get into the field of Jewish jokes. Is there sort of a special province that belongs, it used to belong, say, partially to Lou Holtz and to yourself, and now you almost have the field entirely to yourself?
Oh, goodness, no. I'll tell you why. Today, the overplaying comedian doesn't work. I don't care what dialect you use. It just doesn't work if it isn't legitimate. And unfortunately, my dear friend Mr. Lou Holtz, for whom I have so much respect, does not do a legitimate Yiddish dialect.
Mm-hmm.
This is why he won't be accepted as readily today. Just as if you're doing Italian, it had better be legitimate,
mm-hmm.
as Mr. Pat Cooper would do it,
mm-hmm.
or as I would do it.
Some of your material is so beautiful, and I have heard it picked up and used by other people, and I can remember stories, and some of the Myron Cohen aficionados will remember the guy who was going to turn out the light on the sunken ship and
Do
you find that you do equally well with a change of pace pieces that are shorties that are sort of quick?
Well, yes, in many instances. I'll give you one or two instances, and then you'll understand what I mean. Now, if I do a story that's going to take a minute and a half or two, I have to have laughs long before I get to the punchline. However, now, for many, many years, and you know this, nobody knows this better than you do, because you've been close to Monitor for many years, and I've been privileged to do Monitor. I'm now free to tell you about the tall High Jonsson, Texan. High Jonsson. Walked into a... well, you know, the guy with the 10-gallon hat, the beautiful boots, the tight-fitting jacket with the patch pockets, the embroidered dots running up the front and back. Finds himself in the Lower East Side of New York, predominantly Jewish neighborhood. He's obviously lost. Obviously. He walks up to a little old Jewish peddler with a pushcart and says, "Can y'all tell me where I am?" The little old Jewish man says, "Brother, you're not in Marlboro country."
That's great. Well, you do then get a lot of mileage out of the quickie, the one liner.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't do one-liners.
Well, not one-liners,
no,
but still.
I do short. For example, you've often heard me tell of the two little women in Miami Beach at the Eden Rock. And one says, "Where did you was last season?" Says, "We went to Mallorca." She says, "Where's that?" Says, "I don't know, we flew." And then for a great many years, you know, I've been telling a story about these two adorable little women who are talking about world affairs and world politics. For many years I told this, little realizing that one day it would become apropos of the moment. Because the one little woman says to the other, "What do you think about red china?" She says, "On a yellow tablecloth, it would look beautiful."
That's great. What is your particular pet favorite story of all?
Oh, I don't have any. Anything that makes people laugh. But for 1,000 years, I've been telling a story, you know this, about the little girl, the adorable little thing, 8 years of age. Might be your grandchild. You know, lovely little thing. She went to the bakery shop and said, "Baker, my mummy found a fly in the raisin bread." He said, "So bring back the fly, I'll give you a raisin."
you cannot top that.
You know.
Myron Cohen, you are a really peripatetic gypsy on the road. You're all the time between Vegas.
My wife travels with me, so that makes
it
a lot easier.
Miami, Vegas, Los Angeles, New York. Do you have a favorite American city?
No. I love every place, and I love everybody and all... The one thing that I think that makes my career successful, makes it what it is that I love people and I want people to like me.
I think the chemistry works. I really think so.
I try.
And thank you very much for being here.
If you need
guest.
Any goods, talk to me.
I'll be sure to call. This is Jay Miller with Myron Cohen.
Need any goods? That's Myron, the former silk salesman. I enjoy that. I bet you did too. It's 18 minutes past the hour. You're on the good old summertime Monitor Beacon. This is Bill Mazur with you at Monitor. Let me ask you something. Do you really believe in love at first sight? I mean, one look and you're ready to leap? Well, it's hard to convince an impetuous person to play the waiting game. But let's hear what Dr. Joyce Brothers has to say on the subject, which will be in just a few minutes. Petula Clark. Okay, fella, your deal.
When it comes to summer deals, your Buick dealer's got a nice head start. Because the manufacturer's suggested retail prices on all his new Buicks are actually lower now than they were last year, thanks to the repeal of the federal excise tax. Skylarks, LeSabres, even Electras are priced lower. We're telling you all this because it means that right now, your Buick dealer is making some of the best deals he's been able to make in a long time. See him soon. A summer like this doesn't come every summer.
Dr. Joyce Brothers, our resident psychology major psychologist is what she is, received some interesting mail from listeners who have problems of one kind or another. She has a letter for us now and her reply to it. Doctor?
A young woman writes, "Dear Dr. Brothers, last month I was in an automobile accident that involved 5 cars. Fortunately, I came out of it with minor injuries and a major love affair. There was a heavy fog and the cars jammed into each other. I had just met the fellow who was driving. Actually, we were out on a blind date, but he was a real hero that night. Everybody behaved well, but he took charge and showed true courage. I'm so much in love now that I want to marry him, even though I've only known him a month. We were both at the top of our class. Although we went to separate schools, we both look alike, and my mother says we're so much alike we wouldn't be happy. Is it dangerous to marry after such a short acquaintance? I feel we've known each other a lifetime. Emergency situations often tend to bring out the best in people, as it certainly did in your young man. Often a common danger brings the people involved closer together, and they find a great deal of courage within themselves that they may not have known existed before. It's also true, however, that sometimes people who are very brave in one situation may appear very cowardly and frightened in another. It would be unwise to judge or evaluate any individual solely on the way he behaved in an emergency or crisis situation. There are no hard or set rules about who is or is not going to be happy in marriage. Sometimes likes get along well and remain happily married all their lives, and there are many cases where total opposites find very rewarding lives together. Studies do indicate that the more educated and intelligent you are, the better your chances are in the love and marriage department. In other words, this likeness between you is a positive sign. If you both received good grades and were at the top of your class, you probably have a better than average chance at happiness together. This also indicates the likelihood that you will share many common interests. Where general physical appearance and body build are concerned, studies reveal that likes definitely attract. But where personality characteristics are concerned, statistics show that extroverts tend to fall in love with introverts, and that the person who is tempestuous and emotional is more apt to be drawn by the individual who is consistently governed by his intellect. Almost all studies indicate that love at first sight is apt to be infatuation. The author John Gibson reports that in the study of university students, 2/3 of the infatuations lasted less than 60 days, and 29% lasted from 7 days to a month. Of 1,100 married people questioned, the biggest percentage met through a mutual friend or a blind date. Be glad you're in love, but if you want to improve your chances for a good marriage, don't jump the gun. Wait for at least 6 months and give yourselves a chance to know each other under many different circumstances. Get to know your boyfriend during periods of boredom as well as periods of crisis. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Well, of course, those periods of boredom can be a crisis in themselves, don't you think? After all, most of us are terribly frustrated when we're with someone who won't stop talking drivel when we have something brilliant to say. Ron Goodwin and I'll Never Fall in Love Again. Promises, promises. Well, I can promise you one thing. There'll always be somebody who'll make excuses for not wearing a safety belt in the car in spite of the fact the safety belts reduce auto accident injuries anywhere from 40 to 90%. Just doesn't figure, does it? So what's your excuse? A message on behalf of the National Safety Council. This is Bill Mazur for Monitor. We'll be back after a very short break.
Household products become household poisons when children find them and swallow them. To prevent accidental poisoning in your home, keep all drain cleaners, furniture polishes, and other products locked up. A public service message from the Food and Drug Administration's Bureau of Product Safety.
This space reserved for Monitor Music. So park yourself for 5 minutes and listen to Cornelius Brothers and Sister Rose with Too Late to Turn Back Now and Games People Play by Bert Kempf. Listen.
My mama told me, she said, son, please beware. There's this thing called love and it's everywhere. Least 10 times a day, you know.
see. Welcome's the pleasure of your company.
And it's my pleasure being with you this Saturday night on Monitor. My name is Bill Mazur. You know, I'm sure you'll agree with me that life is of utmost importance, particularly if it has meaning and purpose. But what about a life that is utterly hopeless? And by that I mean a person who is terminally ill. Do you think heroic effort should be made to keep such a person alive? Or do you believe, as my next guest does, that the patient should be permitted to die naturally with dignity? My guest, who will be here very shortly, is a Miami physician, Dr. Walter Sackett, Jr. Right now, though, we have music. Beautiful Sunday by Daniel Boone.
Sunday morning, up with the lark. I think I'll take a walk in the park. Hey, 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 it's a beautiful day. I've got someone waiting for me. When I see her, I know that she'll say,
I guess Dr. Walter W. Sackett, Jr. of Miami, is in the business of preserving life, but he is perhaps better known for his views on death. As a physician, he does not believe that the life of a person who is terminally ill should be prolonged by artificial means. He does believe that it is more humane to make the death process more comfortable and dignified. Now, Dr. Sackett, you're a member of the Florida legislature. Some 5 years ago, I understand, you introduced a bill that would protect a person's right to be permitted to die with dignity. Now, basically, how would the bill legalize that right?
Well, there are three different parts of the bill. The first part would say that you or I, in a competent state of mind, would create a document which would be notarized and registered just like a will or deed and would have equal status with those that you could declare under certain circumstances you no longer wanted to be kept alive artificially with any heroic means. And you could make certain specifications, I suppose, if you wanted to. This part of the bill doesn't meet too much flack, but the second and third portions do meet flack in considering proportions to that part of the bill. Now, Now, the second part would say that if a person were incompetent and had not created such a document, that the relatives of the first degree kinship would be allowed to signify this intent. And this would be a spouse, a parent, or child. And or in the case of a number of brothers and sisters, say that the majority of them agreeing, their wish would be carried out. And this meets a little flack. But the third part, and probably the greatest need arises, is in our public institutions, where there are many people lying there nothing, in a coma or some state, irrational state. There's no hope for the future, but they have no relatives, they have no guardians. And this would provide that three doctors on the staff of that institution could signify their intent unanimously that this person should be allowed to die.
Well, you can understand, can't you, how that would be contrary to the Judeo-Christian concept of life and death?
No, I don't think. I think it's more inhumane to keep these individuals alive than to let them die. And
I wasn't talking about the humanity of it. I mean concept, the Judeo-Christian concept of the idea that life and death lies in the hands of a God.
Well, this is right. It lies in his hands, but I'm defeating his purpose when I'm acting more like God when I keep this life artificially prolonged. And this is where your greatest need arises. Because in private practice, I've done this hundreds of times, allowed a person to die. And I have estimated that 75% of doctors will let a person die when he reaches such a state.
Who asked you to discontinue treatment?
Well, I try not to get into that position. If I, say, have an old person with a stroke and he's lying there in a coma, and finally after a week or 2 weeks he stabilizes and you have no brain waves, then I speak to the relatives. Now, and usually they say, no, we just want to keep Daddy comfortable. Once in a while, you'll get the situation where the person or persons will say, well, we don't know. We don't know whether we have this right, nor should we take this privilege to say this person can die. And so I have one question that's never failed me. I said, that's you lying there. What would you want? And it has never failed me. Oh, said Doc Sack, keep Daddy comfortable, or whatever the situation may be. That's never failed me. And in these big institutions, as I say, and I refer mostly to the severely retarded. Now, you don't see these people on the street. You don't see them in the training schools. They are out of contact with reality, maybe never had, if it was a birth injury, never had contact with reality. Some heads as big as buckets, some little small orange or grapefruit-sized heads. And they're diapered, and they're in the bed, they're babbling. They have no sense of reality whatsoever. And one of the doctors in a 1,000-bed institution in Florida, I asked him one day, what percentage of them really should be allowed to die? And he said, well, I'd say 90%. I said, well, doctor, why don't you let them die? He says, you think I'm nuts? I said, what do you mean? Well, Uncle Joe comes in to see little Sally. He hasn't bothered with her for years, hasn't made any attempt. Oh, little Sally died last year. And so they get out the medical record, and they see she had a high fever, no antibiotic. And he says, I'm not about to incur that risk. Now, my malpractice insurance, and I have never been sued for malpractice or ever threatened with suit, but it's risen from $35 in 1941 till $2,500 the present time, and I understand there's going to be another rise this year. And the patient actually, eventually, somebody has to pay for it. So the patient actually pays for it in the guise of the fees.
Now, let me ask you straightforwardly. Your proposal is to stop treatment, which is designed solely to sustain life. I understand that. Would you continue to give drugs that relieve pain?
Oh, yes, yes. And strange enough, the Catholic Church, the hierarchy, not the actual members of the church, are violently opposed to this. In the Catholic press in Florida, I've been castigated any number of times. Yet Pope Pius XII in 1957 said that you do not have to give these, use these measures, heroic measures, in such cases. And he even went a step further and said you may use the discomfort relieving and the pain relieving medicines, even though you know they may hasten the end. Well, what do you do? Give a one dose of morphine, or do you give 10 doses all at one time? that certainly would relieve the pain and it would end the story, too.
Then you're distinguishing between your proposal and euthanasia, in other words.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up because I try to bring that up. Unfortunately, euthanasia has become taken on the concept of mercy killing. And this is not killing. This is just simply letting that life cease naturally. Euthanasia actually means happy death.
You don't advocate euthanasia,
no,
though?
No. Well, euthanasia, by its simple meaning, is more akin to what I'm preaching than espousing than it is to mercy killing, because it means happy natural death.
That's an interesting point, because euthanasia usually implies induced death.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sackett, we have to pause briefly. A reminder to all of you listeners that you are on the Monitor Beacon. For Monitor with my guest, Dr. Walter W. Sackett, Jr. Dr. Sackett's proposed amendment to the Florida State Constitution would add the right of terminally ill or injured persons to die naturally if they so choose. Now, Dr. Sackett, who's going to have the authority to decide that continued medical treatment would be useless?
First, let me correct you. The Constitution would simply add that right to the Bill of Rights, the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and death with dignity. And then the details would be put forth in the statutes. You get the difference?
Oh, sure, I get the difference. As a matter of fact, the point struck me, and maybe this is adrift for a moment, it's interesting that you are talking about the right to die at the same times that those who are against abortion are talking about the right to live from the moment of conception. So you're talking about the one end, and they're talking about the other beginning. Now, let me ask you again. Who would have the authority to decide that continued medical treatment would be useless?
In an incompetent person, the relatives of the first degree, acting on the advice of two physicians, could make this decision. And interestingly enough, I just picked up a Life magazine today, and they have a survey, a spontaneous survey, in which they got 41,000 answers to a questionnaire. And 91% of people, the answerers, said that they hoped that in terminal illness that the doctor would respect their wishes and not perform all these heroic measures.
Now,
so people in general want this.
At the hearing held this week by the Special Senate Committee on Aging, how did the other physicians who testified feel about the terminally ill or, you know, the injured person's right?
Well, Dr. Foy, who testified in opposition to me, works for the VA hospital system, and he says keep him alive because there's nothing impossible in medicine. There's nothing 100% sure. And I rebutted him by saying, absolutely, when you have a central nervous system injury, that is it. Period. There's no 99%, but that is it. It is final. And that's as certain as anything can be. And that's the sad thing, as our society or our medical world gets more perfect, if that's a good term, I can see the day coming when there'll be more people being kept alive artificially than there are to care for them or pay for it. Now, in Florida alone, these 1,500 children we have, not children because 40% of them are adults, one of them has been a ward of the state for over 60 years, it's going to cost the state of Florida, according to present-day costs and estimates of how long these individuals can live. They can live now between 50 and 60, pure vegetables. It's going to cost the state of Florida $5 billion over a period of 50 years, which is equivalent to 3 years of our total annual state budget. And besides this, we have no idea what the expense is to the individuals, the private expense. It probably is equal or greater than that that these people have paid out before they went broke and turned them over to state support. And figuring from the basis of those figures, in 50 years, it's going to cost this country, around figuring the population of Florida, it's going to cost the country about $100 billion. And when you think of all the good that you could do with this money, with the lesser retardant in your home, your homes for delinquent, institutions for delinquent children, in your jails, in your mental institutions, it's a shame to be wasting this money.
Do you know what a Pandora's box you opened philosophically?
Oh, absolutely. And this is a common expression in the legislature. And this is an interesting sidelight, that even if I never get my bill through, I've created an expression in the Florida legislature of the bill they don't want. They say, let us let it die with dignity. And when I first started, of course, I was the sponsor of this bill. It was the only legislation that is of this nature that's ever been put in the United States. It may be true throughout the world. I'm not sure of that. But now there are four states looking who've considered bills of this nature. Governor McCall of Oregon has asked his legislature to study it. And the United States Senate is now considering the possibility of legislation in this area. So I think I've opened people's eyes to what's going on in this world, that we are using these medical modalities for no real purpose at all.
What is the feeling of your fraternity in the AMA about the bill?
Well, they came down and interviewed me for the Medical News, which is an AMA publication. The average doctor, 75% of doctors say we don't need this thing. We're doing it anyway. Now, but there are, I roughly estimate, there's no way of knowing, 25% of doctors do not practice this. And to prove this to you, I was coming down the hall of our hospital one day, and the lay director threw his arm around my shoulder and said, Dr. Sackett, we love your bill, the death with dignity. I said, oh, but we don't have to worry in our hospital. I said, nobody keeps a person alive without a good cause. He said, don't you kid yourself. We have men on our staff who'll keep them alive till the last bell is rung. So we do need it. Even if you only make the patient or the relatives know that they do have this right.
Thank you very much.
Enjoyed being with you.
Our guest has been Dr. Walter W. Sackett, Jr. of Miami, man who's in the business of preserving life, but is perhaps better known for his views on death.
Around the summer, finger, and let you.
Conniff and the Singers with a theme from the summer of 42. Song by Michel Legrand. This is Bill Mazur for Monitor. News coming up on the hour. I'll be back after that. Hope you're planning to stay.